Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our summer speaker event. And today it's going to be with the Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service for an update on their home safety visit service for people with sensory issues. Before we start, I'd just like to say that we put everybody on mute for the first part of this presentation so that our guest speaker and I can have a chat, and then we'll open it up so that people can ask questions a little later. A reminder also that these seminars are recorded and are available to revisit through our website. So today's guest speaker is Ian Johnson from the Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, Ian, first thing, the elephant in the room, you're not a Devon boy, are you?
You picked up on it quickly. No, I'm not. So I guess, first of all, I should say to everyone, yes, I'm not a local born and bred type person. I've been in Devon longer than I actually have been in Glasgow, believe it or not. And, yeah, I strive to keep my Glasgow accent as long as I possibly can.
Good boy. So, how long have you been in Devon?
So, just coming up 30 years now. It'll be end of this year, it'll be 30 years I've been in North Devon, East Devon sort of region. Yeah.
Okay. When did you join the fire service?
I joined the fire service and I began my basic training in 2003 down at Plymouth, Plympton Service Training Centre. Down there, I've done 16 weeks of basic training down there before being allocated to Howell Road in Exeter. Well, it used to be Howell Road then, in Exeter.
Yeah, so you're up near Middlemore now, aren't you?
I'm now based at, so I've got two aspects to my role. My day-to-day role is I'm a watch manager overseeing technicians who conduct home safety visits.
Yeah.
But I also have an on-call operational role as well, where I respond to a pager for operational shouts. I was operational for the best part of 17 years or so.
Gosh.
Before moving into this role.
So you've seen some sights.
Indeed, yeah, across the board, yeah. Some good, some bad,
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about home safety. Who is at most risk of having a fire at home?
How would you categorise that? You would say basically that we're all potentially at risk through a lack of awareness, a lack of education, potentially. So what we try and do through our Home Safety Initiative, which is a free service, is we try and come out and we promote home safety within the home. So we look at, and it's all bespoke to an individual's needs and an individual's household as well. We don't put a blanket across that. But I'd say the key aspect of every home safety visit is, first and foremost, does an individual have working smoke detection?
Now, we've been referring people into your service for many, many years now. We were the first partner in Devon of the of this service, with your colleague, Keith. So many people who have attended our events in the past or previous speaker events have heard from Keith. They've heard from you. Mm-hmm. They might have heard from Sally.
I don't doubt they have.
Lovely. Sally's been at some of our community events as well. I think the first thing to say that every one of our clients at the moment, because of their sight loss, automatically fits within the criteria to have a home safety visit.
So by virtue of the partnership that we have with Devon Insight, we have basically says that we do apply a criteria for eligibility for a home safety visit, but the partnership means that you guys bypass that. So we accept the fact that you're working with people that are more vulnerable in the sense because of their impairment, if you like, and that's so therefore what we want to do is make the process of having a home safety visit that much more easier. So we'll facilitate that through you guys referring on behalf of that individual.
So why do I think this is so important for us as a charity? And some of you who've known me for a while will know this story, but I was a police officer in Devon and Cornwall. I joined in 1987. And I went to a house fire in Whipton Village Road in Exeter. And it was one of those very, very rare occasions where I turned up in my Ford Escort police car before the fire service. Mm-hmm. And that had never happened to me before. The fire service had always arrived at a house fire before me. And I turned up and the house was well and truly ablaze. All the neighbors were standing in the street. And they looked at me in my little black uniform with silver buttons and said, there's an old lady in that house. And I broke all of the rules. They teach you not to put yourself at danger, but I went into the house to try and get her out. And I couldn't get her out because it was too bad a fire, and she died. And I ended up in hospital. I ended up with a nice certificate in a frame for trying to do something. But fire safety has been really high on my priorities for everybody I've worked with in the voluntary sector. Because at the inquest, and I had to go and give evidence in court, they simply said that had this person had a fire alarm, she might have got out.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
It's 100%, and it seems with hindsight, it seems very logical, you think, because smoke detection is an early warning system. That's what it is. It's before the fire can take hold, what that detection does is it picks up the particulates and the smoke that's been generated, and then it raises that alarm. That then allows that individual time to get herself out safely. So vitally important piece of equipment.
And I know that a lot of people over the years, particularly in the early days, because I don't know when smoke home safety DIY smoke alarms came in, but it must be 30, getting on 40 years ago now, I don't know. But I remember in the early days that people used to take the batteries out of the one in the kitchen because they'd quite regularly cook their toast or their evening meal and it would set off the alarm. So you might have a smoke alarm, but take the battery out.
So you say previously people used to do that. I'd like to say that people don't do that, but unfortunately people still do that. And it's that old reason. And it's about, you know, somebody might have a smoke detection. It might be sighted in the wrong place. It might just be that it's too close to the kitchen.
Yeah.
And what happens is that every time they're cooking something, if they're not closing the kitchen door when they're cooking, it's setting the detection off. And they're going, it's not an issue, it's driving me mad. I'm going to take the battery out of it. And then they forget to replace the battery through time. And then obviously realise they've got that smoke detection which is sitting on the ceiling. They're thinking it's doing its job, but actually it's not doing its job because it's got no power supply to it.
Do we know statistically where most domestic house fires start?
Kitchen area would tend to be there. I mean, it's getting better in the sense that because we're now changing our cooking habits now, so people are cooking less with oils and stuff like that and using air fryers. But if you imagine a kitchen has got more electrical components in there, it's got washing machines, dishwashers, you know, it's got cooking facilities and that sort of thing. So you're likely that you're going to have an issue, it's going to be in the kitchen area. So, but what we can do is we can provide specialist heat alarms for kitchen areas, which will alleviate that concern. So you can put one in the kitchen, it works off temperature. When it gets hot enough in that area, that raises that alarm. Where the smoke alarm will work just purely off the smoke that's generated from a piece of toast, something simple as that. Mm.
So my next fire story was I joined the police. I'd left home. My mum and dad split up. My mum was left in the family home with my two brothers. And they had a domestic fire.
Right.
And the fire was caused by the dishwasher. And it was kept contained quite quickly. But what was devastating was the smoke damage.
Yeah.
So we've still got all our family photo albums, but if you look at them, they've all got this sort of like black dust. We tried to clean everything off, but it was very devastating for the sentimental stuff that was damaged.
And that's one of the big aspects about that when people have a fire is that not only does it stay with them for life because it obviously is such a jarring event to endure, but also it's the smoke damage. So it's the smoke that tends to render people unconscious in the first place before the fire is fully developed. Again, the importance of having smoke detection there. Only takes maybe 3 or 4 deep breaths of toxic smoke to render somebody unconscious and then become fatal. So it is about that whole, you know, you've had that experience, so therefore it tends to prepare you for the rest of your life about it. But the damage to smoke, from smoke, you know, it gets into the soft furniture, it gets into the curtains, you know, it blackens the walls and stuff like that. It's really difficult to kind of get it out. So.
And it's interesting you talk about that living with you. So my incident with the police was 30 years ago. I moved into North Taunton last year, Okehampton Way.
Yeah.
Lots of agricultural places around there where farmers burn things. if I smell a burning tire or anything, instantly takes me back to that fire experience. It's uncanny.
It's a traumatic experience, isn't it? Your brain's processing it in that way, so it associates that every time. You can look at it in a positive, which is that it makes you more vigilant, it makes you more safety conscious. I won't say it's a good thing to experience it, because it's definitely not. That's why we have prevention. And it often comes up, people ask this question about, like, why would you give these free service and why would you go and provide people with free smoke detection and other pieces of equipment? Because when you compare it to somebody having a house fire, the cost to society in general, between the number of appliances, the number of other agencies that get involved, it's astronomically different between, you know, the cost of us providing somebody with a 10-year smoke detector.
I'm just winding my clock back to years ago, talking about how a fire starts.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, there's a triangle. So you've got...
Triangle of combustion. So it's just a chemical reaction, fire, isn't it? Yeah. So it needs the elements. And we always describe fire as being like a living being. It needs certain things to sustain it.
Yeah.
So it needs fuel.
Yeah.
It needs heat. And most importantly, it needs oxygen.
Yeah.
You know, so it needs that heat, that ignition source.
Yeah.
So if it gets the right mix of it, it will sustain itself for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But when it starts to go out of balance, it will start to, you know, if it's not got enough fuel, it will burn itself out. If it's not got enough oxygen, it will suffocate itself.
Yeah.
And so on like that, yeah.
Okay. Gosh, it's turning my clock back to training.
Yeah, well, actually, we say it's triangle combustion, but it's now changed because there's now like a fourth element to
what
we call a passive, which is an element which draws, like, you know, from those three elements, and draws from those as well.
Gosh.
A passive element, yeah.
So, we're here today to talk about these home safety visits.
Yeah. Can I just interrupt you? This is a Scotsman talking. It's not my favourite word, free, but...
Now, you see, that's interesting, isn't it? Because I have put it in the magazine that I hate it when we have to say something's free to make it of value. But you're right.
It's about
there
people's
no
perception
cost.
Of it. The people think that we're trying to sell them something when we're not. We're just trying to, it's through prevention, keep them safe.
So we've been working with you for a number of years now. I can't tell you how many people. I think it's about 200 people that we've put your way. What happens? So we pass somebody on to you.
Yep.
What happens with that call? What can somebody expect?
So, by virtue of the partnership that we set up with Devon Insight and Use Guys, what happens is that you identify somebody who you think would benefit from one of our free home safety visits. You then contact our free phone number.
Yeah.
You quote your partnership number, which is 004.
Yeah.
And you say, I'd like to make a referral on behalf of Mrs. So-and-so. So by virtue of the partnership, you bypass the criteria.
Yeah.
For risk. So we would basically say, right, okay, we're going to make that arrangement. So we'll take the details from you, which will be individual's name, the address, and a contact telephone number, and any other additional information which you think would make the visit much more, we want to facilitate the visit as easy as possible. So any cause for concerns that you might think, actually, Mrs. So-and-so would prefer to have a female technician, or they would prefer to have a male technician, or they want to have a third party involvement, whether that's a support worker, anything like that. Any of that additional information which will just facilitate a smooth visit for that occupant, because it is about the occupant, it's about their needs. And then our admin team will take all that information and they will contact the individual and they will arrange a time and a date that is suitable to their needs. So they'll offer you a visit from, say, 9 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon, and then from 1 till 5.
Yeah.
And they'll try and arrange that and give you details of A, what the technician's name is who's coming to see you, what they'll be wearing, and the ID badge that they'll be displaying for you.
So that's good from a security point of view.
100%, because it just puts people's minds at ease and they know exactly what to expect.
Okay. So you've turned up at a house.
Yeah.
Introduced yourselves, you go in, what happens next?
So again, what we're trying to do with our technicians, and all our technicians are trained, they've got really good soft skills, they've got really good people skills. So it will just be a bit of general chat. We won't just come and say, right, we're here just, we want to talk to you about fire safety. That's the primary purpose for there, but we want to engage with you. You want to put you at ease, they want the technician to be at ease, we want it a wee bit to and fro, because that's when people tend to, when they're at ease, they tend to reveal more about themselves, and then we can talk to them about other aspects of it. So the home safety visit itself will obviously cover the fire safety aspects in the home. So we'll test that you've got working smoke alarms. If you haven't got any working smoke alarms, we'll provide you with ones which have got a 10-year sealed battery inside it. So that previous issue that Graham raised round about people taking batteries out, you can't do that with the ones that we provide because it's a sealed battery.
Okay.
The manufacturer says it's for 10 years. That doesn't necessarily always happen because it's an electrical piece of equipment. But if there's any faults, so we'll maintain that as well, any faults with it. So we'll basically, the visit will be bespoke to the occupant and their needs and the layout of the property. So we'll fit the smoke detection where they feel it's appropriate. We will do a walk and talk through the whole property with you to look at different aspects and try and identify different risks and hazards within the property. Because what tends to happen is if people have never had a problem with something, it's not a risk to them. Mm. They're not aware of it. But their technicians will be able to say it's somebody like overloading the sockets there. Might be an aspect of it. You know, going back a few years, the old cube adapters that people used to get?
Yes.
We're not big fans of those. So what we can do with that, with consent from the occupant, will be, and just going back to that point about consent, that's a key factor when you guys are making a referral. It has to be consensual that you're doing it on that individual's behalf.
We don't tend to bully our clients into we're firm sometimes. Mm. You know, it's very difficult because you're trying to be caring and helpful, but you know, this saves lives, as we know, and it's very difficult to monitor, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how you monitor how successful a preventative campaign is.
Well, I would say if we, and this is, again, don't take this the wrong way, but if we never hear from you again in an operational capacity.
That's good.
That's a good thing, yes. You know, we would much rather come and see somebody, you know, have a nice friendly chat with them, talk to them about fire safety in the home, than having to come and see them at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when it's all gone wrong and it's noisy and it's smoky and it's dark and frightened.
Yeah.
We don't want that, so. Yeah.
So we talked about smoke alarms. We talked about overloading plug sockets.
Yeah, so just going back to that point, so these cube adapters, what tend to be happens is you imagine you get three different appliances, it's plugged into the wall, switched on, you get three different things like the hoovers plugged in there, so somebody's hoovering away. Through the course of time, it starts to pull down on that cube adapter and starts to weigh down on that. And what can tend to happen with that is it can get a bit of a short in it, and that can cause a problem. And we do find that in the past, we've had that. So what we'll do with your consent is we'll remove that and we'll give you what we call like a gang socket one, so with the adapter, four adapters in it, which is all rated safely, and then we will replace, so whether somebody's got a TV in there, their DVD player, a Skybox, we'll readjust that again with their consent. So that's one aspect of that in terms of safety. We'll look at the individual's needs, whether they're a smoker, you know, we'll take that into consideration because obviously that can increase some of the likelihood of having a fire. As people responsible smokers, which most people are, some people might say, yeah, I smoke, but I tend to go outside in the back garden. We'll talk about how you dispose of your used cigarettes when they're finished and so on like that. And then we'll go around, we'll talk to them about, and one of the key aspects with somebody is that if their hearing's impaired as well.
Yes.
So one of the things that our technicians will pick up on is that if somebody's living on their own and they're wearing a hearing aid, what the technician might ask them to do is say, can you hear the alarm? If I test it, and if they test it with a hearing aid, they go, yeah, I can hear that fine. But the issue is at night time, because people don't tend to sleep with a hearing aid in.
Mm.
So what the technician will do is very politely, and it sometimes takes a wee bit of coaxing, and they'll say, can I ask you to go and lie in your bed? I'm going to close your door and take your hearing aid out, and I'm going to test your alarm. If they can't hear the alarm, then we can provide them with what one of our specialists have, a hearing alarm.
Yeah.
And they work off a three phase. So you get your audible alarm.
Yeah.
You get a flashing strobe light which goes next to your bedside cabinet, and we give a vibrating pebble which goes inside your pillowcase.
Yeah.
So when it goes off, they all go off, and it's all singing, it's all dancing, it's like a nightclub basically. You would do well to sleep through it.
Yeah.
So that's another aspect that we can kind of look with them as well. And we can just talk to, as I say, as bespoke to the individual. We don't just apply it same size fits everybody. So we'll think about, you know, what is that individual's needs? You know, we can talk to them about welfare aspects and safeguarding. We can signpost them for other agencies.
Yes.
You know, we have a huge, extensive partnership with what's different agencies that we can refer people onto as well. That might be energy suppliers. It could be, you know, befriending welfare services, anything like that. Transport links as well. We can link in with these things as well. So
you can tell an awful lot from visiting somebody's house. If I go back to my policing days, one of the things we always try to do is get somebody to make a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Because I think you talk better over a cup of tea. And I was used to go into the kitchen sometimes and watch the person making a cup of tea, and you'd see that there might be a burnt tea towel, for example, next to a gas stove, yeah. Or there wasn't much food in the kitchen, and you could tell a lot about somebody's welfare from a home visit.
So that's why it's important that we always say, and it's key to stress, that we are completely non-judgmental.
Yeah.
We're coming in at invitation to your property, and we are there to do the best we can to keep you safe in that property. But you're right, and that's what our technicians focus on. It is about that engagement.
Yeah.
We're not there to tell you what you should do and what you shouldn't do. We're there to offer you advice and guidance to keep you safe. And that we can take all different aspects of how you choose to live your life into consideration for that.
Let's talk about escape routes and what we mean by that.
So as part of the home safety visit as well, we will talk about, good practices. And one of the good practices is having an escape plan. Well, we tend to link it and we call an escape plan bedtime routine. So if we break it down, we'll say, the escape plan is, how would you get out safely? We have to think about worst case scenario. How would you get out safely in the event of a fire? So is it 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning? What is the day? Have you got a route that you've got memorised and that you've got set in your mind where you know that you're safe to get out? So whether that's downstairs, do you turn left? Is the kitchen in the way? Is that going to be where the issue is? Is there an alternative to going that way out? Could you think about the back door? And we'll incorporate that into the bedtime routine. So the bedtime routine will be things like switching off electrical appliances from the switch at night time if they're not in use. Obviously not fridge freezers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sky boxes which tend to update overnight.
Mm.
But things like any other electrical equipment that doesn't need to be on during the night. So dishwashers, washing machines, tumble dryers, big no-no. Don't be putting them on at night time and going to bed.
No.
And then we talk about closing doors on rooms at night time as well, because what that does is it compartmentates fires.
Yeah.
So it holds a fire back. Your smoke detection will still work, even though the door's closed, but what it'll do, it'll prevent that fire spread from within that compartment, and that includes the smoke damage as well. Because there's loads of different displays where you can see the difference between a door that's open and a fire in a room,
yeah,
and a door that's closed and a fire in a room. And it's massively different, in terms of the smoke damage and the spread. So we'll talk to that. We'll talk about good practices, about where do you keep your house keys at night time?
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that.
So obviously you want to make sure that they're within reach and you know that exactly where you can find them. We'll say things about keeping a mobile phone, keeping it fully charged, and make sure, not on charge, but fully charged. And so in the event of a fire, so say you're upstairs bedroom, the fire's downstairs and you can't get down, you can at least call us out and you can say, I'm upstairs, I'm in the back bedroom, and then our control staff can then talk you through that. And that will be closing the door in your bedroom, putting something underneath the door to sort of smoke getting in, getting the window open, and then our crews will be there within a matter of minutes to effect a rescue and deal from that. So that the mobile aspect, or at least a landline of some sort. Mobile's better because obviously a landline that's involved in a fire could lose its power supply. So it's definitely worth having a mobile handy and your keys so you can get out safely.
Because a lot of people are obviously locking their front door.
And I guess from an ex-police, the aspect of it, leaving your keys in the door at night time is probably not a good security move, is it?
I do it all the time.
And again, when we talk to people, we're not trying to scaremonger people, and that's what we don't want to do, but it's about raising that awareness. It is education, and that's all it is. We're just trying to say, based on operate, and when we talk to people about stuff, we base it on operational evidence. We don't just talk stuff out of thin air and go, oh yeah, it'd be a good idea to talk about that. And one of the quite common things that people say, oh, that's not true, is about glass ornaments and mirrors and windows and stuff like that at the right time of year. And I've been to quite a few operational incidents myself where it's been a cause of fire.
Yeah.
And people go, that doesn't happen. It really does happen.
Having a glass globe on a windowsill, not a good idea.
I
must be honest, I'm teasing Tess, who I know is listening. Because Tess has a paperweight that she leaves on the windowsill, and I keep taking it off the windowsill in the office. In the office.
And because it's that same thing, it's just a bit of that, it's that perfect storm. It's the right time of year, the sun's in the right, it's quite low, and it shines through the window, reflects through the glass ornament, onto soft furnishings, and it can be anything. I've been to one where it set fire to a TV, or it set fire to curtains, the curtains have caught fire, it's fallen down, and then it began to spread. One of the ones I went to was this old boy years and years ago, was that he, every day he would sit by his window, digging out his horses, and then he would walk down to the betting shop, have a pint, put his bet on, and then come home. And on this one particular day, he just happened to leave his glasses lying at a particular angle, and shunting through the glasses, set fire to the newspaper, that caught fire, other stuff on the table, and then it began to spread, and then we were called out. And when he came home from his pint, we were there in attendance.
Oops.
Dealing with an issue on his property. So, yeah.
Should we talk about carbon monoxide?
Yes.
Let's talk about carbon monoxide.
So that's another big aspect of things that's obviously becoming more and more, because a lot of people have like solid fuel burners and stuff like that as well in the properties. So we do apply a criteria for carbon monoxide, for giving out carbon monoxide, so alarms. We will talk to people about really key getting your appliance serviced every 12 months. That is a key factor of it. How old is your appliance? You know.
So we're talking about gas boilers here.
Yes, yeah, so anything like a gas boiler, gas fires, any gas appliances. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you live in a privately rented property, a landlord's got that legal responsibility to get that gas check done every 12 months as well. But good practice from any individual would be that, you know, you get that service done and you look at how old your appliance is and make sure it's getting serviced regularly. We recommend people having a carbon monoxide alarm, and we can supply them to people, but we will look to that criteria.
But these things aren't massively expensive, are they?
They're not at all. No, you can get them from any hardware store. They're not hugely. Yeah. And what it does is just offer you that wee bit more comfort and security in the sense that you know that you're covered. But your technician will cover all those aspects about that, so they'll talk to you about your appliance. They'll look at where your boiler might be situated. If you've already got an alarm, they'll check the expiry date on it, because it's quite an important aspect that people don't realise, is that they do have expiry dates on them. And let's say, yeah, we can provide that type of equipment for people as well.
If I remember rightly, carbon monoxide, they call it the silent killer.
Yeah.
What do we mean by that?
Basically, because there's no smell to it, you can't detect it, and it's just kind of like... It's a bit the same sort of... weight, if you like, is air, so it tends to just dissipate in the air as well. And people don't realise that they actually suffer. If they don't have an alarm, they don't realise that they're suffering, and they'll get ill effects, almost flu-like effects for it. But obviously if they leak, because it's a byproduct of gas burning off, it's a byproduct of that, and people don't realise it actually, you know, they're getting headaches more frequently, they're getting more lethargic, that sort of thing. Left undetected, it can be fatal. You know, and it is quite a common thing you do hear about people's different practices from it, you know. People are dying, barbecues tend to be one that people are camping and they think, oh, I'll bring the barbecue in the tent at night to keep a bit warm. That's proved fatal.
Really?
Yeah,
oh no.
Because it's still burning off and you know, that byproduct's still coming off. But yeah, it's a really important piece of equipment, you know. Early warning system again.
Let's talk about the delicate area of what we sometimes call hoarding.
Yep.
Having a little bit too much stuff in your house. What do we mean by hoarding?
So basically, hoarding is, and again, this is where we come back to people and say we're a bit non-judgmental. This is how people choose to live their life for whatever reason it might be. And the term hoarding, it probably doesn't quite reflect the seriousness of the issue, because it's such a psychologically complex issue. You know, for whatever reason somebody's doing that, they're storing stuff and they're not disposing of that stuff, and that collection gets bigger, and it tends to get to a point where it becomes harder to do something about it. It becomes a norm and it just keeps accumulating, and it has a twofold effect, because it tends to make the individual less reluctant to allow people to come into the property to help address it, because they're embarrassed, shameful about it. Again, it comes back to that, no, we're not concerned by that. We want to work with that individual. We want to work with professionals as well. And, you know, I stress the point that as a psychologically complex issue, we do need engagement from the individual. We do need GPs to be involved. We do need healthcare professionals to be involved. In the past, we used to, just kind of think it was as simple as just saying to somebody, clear out your mess and you'll be all right. But in the past, we have provided funding. At this point in time, we don't have the funding for it, but in the past, we did pay for decluttering agents to come in. But within 6 months, we were back to square one. Because again, you want to break in that, the psychological reasoning behind it. But it does have a really serious twofold effect to it. What it does is it limits that individual's ability to get out of the house safely in the event of a fire or an incident. But it also impacts on our crews getting in there safely as well. to rescue somebody. Because our crews, we have search patterns and rescue techniques that we look at when we enter into a property. And that gets more made more difficult when it's got excessive, what we call excessive fire loading in there. Because obviously what that does, we're talking back to the combustion again, it's fuel for a fire.
Yeah.
The more it can get, the quicker it'll burn, and the more intense it'll burn. So what we will do as part of that is, when we visit somebody in that situation, we will take what we call baby steps with it. So we'll just say, well, look, let's just think about, can we clear a pathway to make sure that you can get from point A, where you tend to be more often, safely to your front door in the event of a fire. And we'll work with that. And we'll revisit that with them as well. We'll come back and we'll say, how are you getting on? Are you getting any support? And we will refer for support, you know, on their behalf as well. And again, what it will sort of help with that as well tends to be is that we will address it in small steps at each time. And we will record that. We have what we call an operational risk information system.
Yeah.
So we'll let the occupant know that we're going to keep this on our system so that should our crews get turned out to that property, it will say, number 35, please be aware, excessive fire loading. So then crews know that's going to have an impact on it, because potentially what we have, what we call as persons reported, there might be somebody in that property who's unable to self-evacuate because of that reason. And they'll then affect the rescue accordingly.
I was telling you earlier about the most vivid one I had, which was a lady in Exeter. And I went to the house, and she opened the front door, and literally floor to ceiling was stacked up newspapers, neatly stacked, beautiful square corners, floor to ceiling. And I walked down the hallway, went into the lounge, and again, all of the room was lined floor to ceiling in stacked newspapers. You're talking 8 feet high up to the ceiling. And it was really quite scary.
Yeah.
Very, very scary. And she was a smoker. I mean, that's what, so the ceilings were a bit yellow. She was a smoker. And I remember just thinking, this is really dangerous. About 5 years ago, years later, I was talking to a friend, and it turned out that it was his mother.
Oh, right.
And they had tried to help many, many times. But it was through the fire service that they managed to make a few changes. Mm. And it was just about getting that safe route.
And that's what it is. It's about that baby. I mean, obviously, the first thing we do is make sure they've got adequate working smoke detection within that, because that's an early warning system. And it's just about reducing the risk to that individual, you know. And I've been to quite a few myself where it's been a case of that somebody has fallen over and they're unable to get up because of the clutter, the excess of the clutter. And so we've had to go in there and effect a rescue through that. But it's really key to say that we want to come in, we want to work with the individual. We're non-judgmental in that sense. That's how you choose to live your life.
Mm.
That's it. We'll work with that, and we will do it in baby steps. Our technicians are really tactful about that. We don't go into anybody's property and say, you mustn't do that or you must do this. We will say, good advice would be, do this, you know, and don't do that. So
I suppose what you want is you want people to do something.
Because we want them to be able to take on board the message that we're trying to say. We're about trying to keep you safe and your property as best we can, whether that be through equipment or whether that be through advice and guidance and good practices. Let's say we come back to bedtime routines, escape plans.
Excellent. Right, I'm thinking we're getting to the stage now where I'd like to open up the call to listeners. Hoping Jenny's listening. Jenny, can we unmute everybody, please?
Yes, just in the process of doing it.
Okay, we'll just talk for a second while you're doing that. Thank you. So I'm going to open up the call now. And my first question is going to be, has anybody on the call actually had a home safety visit?
Yes.
Who's that?
Yes, it's David.
Robert.
I'm a bit late, I know. I got tied up with something. I've just actually called in just right now.
Well, you've well timed this, David. It would be just really nice to know how your home safety visit happened and how long ago it was.
It was about 3 weeks ago, roughly.
Oh, great.
And it was an excellent visit from your chap. I forget his name now, actually, but it doesn't matter. It was very good. Talked me through it all. The talk inside of it. Replaced two smoke alarms. He fitted a heat detector in my kitchen, and a carbon monoxide detector upstairs in one of my bedrooms where the boiler is situated. Couldn't fault it. Excellent service. Really, really good. Really good.
That's an excellent testament there. That's what we want people to have, a really positive experience of it, and then to share that with other people, because, as I say, we're not selling people anything. We are just about coming out and engaging with you, looking at you and your needs. And it sounds as though, I mean, for whatever reason, you clearly need quite a bit of equipment there to keep you safe.
Yeah, and the other thing was the escape route, which was important, because I'm visually impaired like most of us that are calling in today.
Yeah.
It was helpful to know the escape route and what to do when these alarms go off as well, what to do, you know.
Yeah, and I'll say it would attest to you the importance of testing your alarms, make sure they're working, test them regularly. We recommend at least once a month you test your alarms.
Yeah.
Make sure they're okay.
The only issue I had, the alarms, particularly the smoke alarms, are quite high up. I've got an old house and the ceilings are very high, and if it does go off accidentally, the smoke alarm downstairs, it's a bit tricky for me with sight loss, getting on a ladder to try and get up there to cut it out, you know, to stop moving.
Did he provide you with a testing stick?
No, he didn't, no.
Right, because normally what we can do is, like, it depends on how high your ceilings were. It might have been a case that he thought it wouldn't have served you any purpose in that.
They're pretty high. I mean, I'm 6 foot, and these are higher than me. They're probably, eight, nine foot, yeah.
Right, so I mean, what we'd say to people is, obviously, it's when they go off, like, for whether it's a fault, whether you're making toast or anything like that, and it goes off, there's a reset button in the middle of them, which you can just use, like,
a brush handle
or a broomstick, anything like that, to just reset it.
I might actually work something out myself with a round bit of wood, you know, a round bit of doweling wood, and maybe get a bit of adhesive on it so as at least I can feel it where it is and give it a prod.
Yeah, because, let's say, if you have, like a brush handle or anything like that, that would be that you can hold on to, but it's obviously making sure. The test facility on the alarms that have been fitted, they're quite big, they're right in the centre. Quite a large circumference to them.
I know where they are. It's the one upstairs didn't go off, though, funny enough. It's only the downstairs one. But it's minor. It's a minor issue. I know what it was. I left the door shut and I was having a cigar in the kitchen. The smoke drifted through. But I'll do it outside in future. Have a cigar.
That's not a good aspect. And it is about talking to people about their behavioural aspects, about how they do things. So like you just said there, David, about I'll now go outside and smoke. That's going to reduce your potential and your risk in there as well.
Yeah, but all I can say is it was excellent service and it didn't cost me a penny. That was the good side of it.
And that's it's something I spoke to you earlier on, Graham, about, you know, through prevention is that, you know, people say, oh, you're giving all this equipment out and, you know, it's you're not charging people for it, it's all free. It's much better that we come and see you in that capacity than, let's say, you don't have that detection and you have an incident and we have to come out and we send 2 or 3 appliances and stuff like that.
I know primarily it's my safety, but I've got a guide dog here as well and I wouldn't want him getting injured in a fire. No way.
Nah, that's excellent. I mean, I'm so pleased that you had a sort of good experience of it anyway, David, and
yes,
for sharing it with our callers.
And all I can say is thank you to all of you at the... what do we got? Devon and Somerset Fire Service. Yeah.
Well, again, and then that comes back to Graham and Graham's team again about making that. How did you, did they refer on your behalf, was it David?
Sorry?
Devon Insight who referred to the fire service on your behalf?
Yes, they did, but I've had them in twice. I've been down here 23 years now. I've been a member of Devon Insight for a long time, probably as long as I've been down here. And yes, it was a referral from Devon Insight
that's excellent. Spread the word, so I'll say.
Good, good. I'll drop you that fiver later, David. Has anybody else had a home safety visit on the call?
It's Karen here. Hello.
Hello, Karen.
Yes, I've had about 3, actually, over the years. And I've had my alarm fitted and then... later on, a couple of years later, they came and fitted it again. And then I had a visit last year because of my that before it was because I was disabled, And last year I had a visit with looking at the fire safety, and that was, you know, because of Devon Insight bringing it up. And actually, I smoke, and I have a little candle, and the fireman who came round, I think he was a little bit judgmental against me, you know, because it wasn't that friendly anyway.
Oh, right.
And he said, "Oh, I'll get you a fire blanket," you know. And I said, "Well, what's this fire blanket made of?" And he said, "Oh, I don't know. I'll leave it on your doorstep." So he went away, and there was one left on my doorstep in a plastic bag. And I opened it up, and it was very, I'd really like to know, because I couldn't read anything, what these fire blankets are made of. Because he said, "Oh, you can wear it when you're smoking." And I thought, well, you know, okay, that's sort of a good idea. But then when I felt it, and it just felt so synthetic and plastic, and yeah. I just thought, I don't know what I'm dealing with here.
Well,
and
so we
actually, I've never used it, and I gave it away to a charity shop, so I didn't like it at all. Could you please tell me, please, what they are made of?
So we can provide fire retardant bedding, covers and throws for occupants. So just because somebody's a smoker doesn't necessarily say that they need to have that type of equipment, because people can be what we call responsible smokers, can't they?
Yes, I think I am, actually.
So it would be a case about, like, saying the technician should have been going to your bedroom to say to you, "Do you smoke in bed?"
More and more I'm smoking out on my patio now. But in the winter I do smoke inside, but when I lose all my central vision, I'll only be smoking outside. But I just wanted to know what this actual blanket was made of.
I couldn't tell you the chemical, mate. I know it's a fire retardant blanket, and what it will do is if you were to drop a cigarette onto it, it wants to ignite. That's the key aspect of it. We would only provide you with bedding if you were a smoker who had smoked in bed. And there was signs when about your bed of maybe where dropped cigarettes, burn marks on the bedding, on the carpet nearby, that sort of thing. That would prompt somebody to think, okay, you'd maybe benefit from having some fire retardant bedding.
I guess that would never happen for me, but it just felt that it didn't look too healthy or feel too healthy, you know.
I think it's more about, rather than the aesthetics of it, we're more thinking about the practical side of it. Will it not ignite if you were to drop a cigarette on that? And that's more...
Or the candle, if you're
I was just going to come back onto the candle aspect again. Should have talked to you about, again, responsible use of candles. So things like tea lights, that sort of thing, you know, making sure that if you're going to use tea lights, that you use them in a proper holder and not in the aluminium foil. Because we've had that in the past where people have had them on the TV. They light them. The aluminium foil is really thin. It heats up really quickly. Comes into contact with the plastic on the TV. Melts through. We've had it with people in baths as well. Same sort of thing. So there is about, you know, with candles, making sure that you use them responsibly. At night time, make sure, or when you're leaving the property for any reason, that you make sure there's no candles still on, that you blow them out and you're satisfied that they are out. Don't have them next to windows where you've got neck curtains and the window might be open, because it just takes that little breeze to kind of blow the neck curtain and it comes into contact with it. So we're not fans of candles, but we do accept that people do use them, but we just want to make sure we can give them some advice and guidance to say, if you're going to use them, you use them responsible. And when you're finished with them, you know that they're not going to present a danger to you.
Okay, let's move on to the next question.
What I was going to say about the, I have got carbon monoxide, I've got two actually, and one thing, I have got a 10 plug thing, but I've only got 4 in it, and I've just had vertigo. What happens if you have an attack, and then, you know, someone comes on, and something happens in your house?
button.
Are you one of the doctor for the vertigo? That's Robert, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Are you under the doctor for the vertigo?
I am, yeah. I'm going back to work on Thursday, so still relief.
Do you have a, have you got like an alarm system?
I have, yeah. Yeah.
And that's linked to a support provider, is it, Robert?
To my brother.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, because obviously our crews are special with gas detectors. If somebody was suspected it was carbon monoxide poisoning, our crews would put on breathing apparatus to get into the property with your special gas detectors, and that will pick up if there's any sort of like excessive build-up of carbon monoxide on it.
Yeah, I have got an alarm, one of these smoke alarms. I have got, but I don't get up and get it. It goes out in 2025, and I've got one carbon monoxide in here in the lounge, and I've got one in the kitchen. My brother got the second one offline, but I have had two fire visits. I had one this year, and I think I had one last year from the Metal Society. I'm on a two flights of stairs, no lift. That's another thing I was going to mention about.
Because obviously we can only take things in isolation, and sometimes people their accommodation might not be suitable for their needs and their purposes, but it's not something that we've got any
power.
You know, we can. You know, we get quite a lot where people say, "Oh, can you write to my landlord and say that I need to be moved and stuff like that?" And but we don't have that authority. We are offering you advice and guidance to keep you safe and the property.
Well, I was asked a couple of years ago, last year, I think it was. But because it's my own and I've lived there 23 years as well, so and the people who are here, we all help each other, or most of us do, you know.
And that's good that you've got a support network there as well.
This is another reason why I wouldn't want to move, because I get the support from certain people who are fantastic, you know.
And just going back to that point about part of the home safety visit as well, is our technicians have got a massive directory of signposting, so they can look at, you know, with your consent, obviously, referring you on to other agencies and other partnerships to see if we can get any additional support needs met for you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Robert. Next person? Next person, do we have somebody else with a question?
It's not a question, actually, Graham, but it's just some advice. Listening to Karen, what I've got at the back of my house, I've got a service lane at the back of my house in Exmouth, and the garage backs onto it. What you can do to deter people is put a false CCTV camera up there. They're not very expensive, and that is a deterrent. It has got a wire, but it's not actually wired in. You just put a hole in it and you feed the wire into it, and it looks as if it's live. You've got a live CCTV camera. And I've spoken to the police about this, and they do act as a deterrent. People will look and see that and think, oh, God, this has all been recorded, so I'm not going to do this. In Karen's case, this fly tip, and it might work. It's worth a try, maybe, to get someone to fit one. They're not expensive. They are false, but they look real. They look really real, because I did have an issue.
If it serves a purpose, let's say if you can't restrict the access, but maybe we're speaking with the landowner as well to see if they can assist with that.
Access as a deterrent, believe me, it does work, because I've had.
The problem with fly tipping, David, is that once one person starts, everybody thinks it's free reign to just keep adding to it.
They may think if they're driving around it with a substantial amount of stuff in a car or a van or whatever, they got this thing in their mind, hang on a minute, this is recording my registration number on my car, and that's traceable, as you know, your car registration number. Just a thought.
Thank you, David. I don't know that I'd do that, actually. It just feels, you know, number one, there isn't any electricity because they're too far away from the house.
You don't need it, Karen. That's what he's saying. It's just a visual deterrent.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that could... I don't want to upset my neighbours either, even though it could be some of the neighbours in our, you know, cul-de-sac who are doing it, basically. But I don't know. It's... It's all a bit tricky. I think going, maybe just calling up the environmental health might be a good idea, really, and let them come and see.
At least then you're logging it then, and it's been, you know.
Yeah, and the other thing is, of course, if they get away with it, it encourages them to do it even more. They come one day, oh, that's Andy, someone's taken all this rubbish away, so I'll bring some more. Another time, and they just take it away, whoever, the council, etc. Yeah,
I know.
Food for thought.
Well, thank you, everybody. Ian, what's your key message for our listeners today?
So, key message would be is, A, have you got working smoke detection? That is the key factor. Everybody should have working smoke detection and make sure it's tested regularly. If you haven't already had one, and even if you had one and it's been some time, I would speak to Graham and his team about getting referred for a free home safety visit and getting one of our technicians to come out. Because I say, it is all about prevention. It's about keeping you safe within your property and looking at your needs within that property. We're not an enforcement. We're there just to offer you advice and guidance. As I say, we are non-judgmental. We're not concerned by how people choose to live their lifestyle. We get right across the board people's complexities, whether it's drug and alcohol issues, mental health issues. We will work with that, and we do have partnerships who can work to just to keep you safe. So just bear in mind, it's a free service, nice, friendly chit-chat. Sometimes that's all it is about advice and guidance. If we need to provide you with equipment, then we'll do so, and it's all free.
Ian, thank you so much for joining us today. I've really enjoyed that. That's been really good. I'd just like to make everybody aware of some forthcoming events. All of these are in the InVision magazine, which has been sent out in the last couple of weeks. Anyway, Thursday, 29th of June, we've got the Tavistock Living Well with Sight Loss event, which is at the Anchorage Centre. On the 11th of July, we've got a sight loss seminar, so just like today, on the telephone service, and that's with Blind Veterans UK. And Blind Veterans UK were known as St Dunstan's, so we're pleased to have Aaron Garant, who's the community team leader from Blind Veterans, joining us. That's the 11th of July. On the 8th of August, this is something which comes up a lot. We've got Judith Potts, who's the founder of Esme's Umbrella, and she'll be talking about visual hallucinations, and that's Charles Bonnet syndrome. That comes a lot in, comes up a lot in our discussions with people, and she's a very interesting lady. Thursday, 10th of August, we've got our event, Living Well with Sight Loss event in Tiverton at Old Heathcourt School. And finally, you would have seen me doing our little launch of our conference, Living Well with Sight Loss exhibition, and annual general meeting, which will be held on Friday the 20th of October. We're still in the planning stages with that, but we've just signed up all of our guest speakers. We've got some sponsorship. We're just talking about the full budget and stuff so that we can set the ticket price, but it won't be much. It'll be enough just to cover the lunch. And that will be on Friday the 20th of October. And as it says in the newsletter, if you could just give us a call and get your name on the list, we'll make sure that you get priority. But we will be opening that up to other organisations and people like the Sensory Team and other charities. So that's today's seminar over. Thank you for joining us today. And I'd like you all to take care. Enjoy the sunshine. And just one little bit of advice with the sun at the moment is try and protect your eyes. So those of you who wear visors, make sure you wear them, and encourage your friends and family to wear sunglasses because of the UV damage. And one thing I would really like to stress, which doesn't get talked about at all, is the importance of getting children to wear sunglasses too. It amazes me, the adults you see walking down the beach wearing sunglasses, and the kids have got no eye protection, so encourage that. So, thank you everybody. Take care.
Thank you.
And we'll speak again soon. Bye-bye.
Nice to meet you all.
Thank you everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.